Welcome back, Alchemist. It's good to have you back here. I'm Full Data, and today, on today's episode, we're going to be talking about, well, before we start diving into talking about data alchemy, our gaming news and content creation, I wanted to take time to discuss alchemy, what it is, and how it ties into everything we're going to be discussing, because alchemy is a big thing for me lately. I guess maybe like a spiritual awakening, kind of, I guess. And alchemy was always something I've always believed in terms of like how it works. And, you know, if you watched Full Metal Alchemist, which is one of the reasons why I picked my brand, if you've seen Full Metal Alchemist, you'll get the tie of Full Data Alchemist to it. But the reasons why I picked it is because it talks about equivalent exchange. And that's one thing in life that I always believed in, that you cannot gain something without sacrificing something else in life, whether it be time for money, trees for wood, raw data to golden insights, even life for death. I know this really deep for gaming and data, but these are the principles that, you know, I feel like we are missing as we hurry through our lives, rushing to go nowhere. And alchemy really is breaking things down to its rawest form to transform into something else. And this really ties into data and gaming very closely, whether you're taking data and looking at the raw data from it and then transfusing it into like this crazy chart that has all this information you can give to a stakeholder so they can then know the story of what you're telling and how to make the best decisions for their company. And same thing with gaming. You know, you're sitting there, you know, the sacrifice of gaming is you'll keep beating up against a boss. If you're playing a Souls-like game, they keep going up against the boss over and over again, dying. And then the next thing you know, you learn that mechanic and you beat it. So it's like transforming yourself from doing the same thing over and over again to make one simple change, and you've transformed dying to winning to living. So it's very loosely based there, but it's the concept of what alchemy really is. So I wanted to discuss alchemy with everyone before we really get into the whole process of data alchemy and how it's going to tie into gaming, our content creation, how we're going to be using it for Twitch statistics, you know, for showing it, how I'm going to use it on my content, and how we're going to go from using data alchemy to go from, you know, I think sitting at like 3 viewers right now, we're going to really use that to push and grow to become a larger streamer using data alchemy and really using that to push into the larger numbers and growing ourselves and using growth around it with data alchemy. So I want to share alchemy with you. I think it is going to be deeper than just let's talk about data science. And I call it data alchemy because it really is the transmutation of data. It's not just taking data and looking at numbers and charts. I believe there's a deeper process to it. And I really want to talk about that. So the first thing I'm going to talk about is the origins of alchemy. And then we'll go through the philosophical of it, the alchemical symbols, the difference of alchemy in different cultures, the famous alchemists that are out there, traditional modern transition to modern chemistry. Because alchemy, if you don't know, alchemy was like the base of chemistry. Alchemy started everything to what we have today. Without alchemy, we wouldn't have all the medicines and the healing properties that we have today in our Western medicines if it wasn't for alchemy. Then we'll actually start talking about how that's going to tie into how data alchemy is going to tie into how it ties back to alchemy. So we'll talk about that as we go forward, and a lot of different things. So we have a long episode today talking about alchemy. So we're going to jump right into this, starting with the origins of alchemy. So alchemy was an ancient practice that blends, you know, a lot of science and mysticism, philosophy. I believe I've been reading alchemy for about a month and a half-ish now, so I'm still new to it, so I'm not an expert on it, but I want to share my knowledge with you and how it ties back into my brand and whatnot. So it originated from the Hellenistic Egypt. It also had a lot of influence from Greek and Arabic and Jewish cultures. So it ties way, way back. You know, I think Thoth was the first actual true alchemist from the Egyptian times, and he had all his knowledge and used alchemy for many different reasons. The primary goal, what they were using it for, was taking alchemy and transmuting base metals into noble metals like gold, and the creation of the elixir of mortality, and using to discover any type of universal cure for diseases. So this is really considered both a precursor to modern chemistry and a spiritual discipline, you know, focusing on a lot of purification and transformation between between the material and spiritual levels. So alchemy at the physical level is taking, trying to take like lead and converting it to gold. But later on, people realize it's not that lead, as they deciphered the text, the ancient text of alchemy, it's not about just transferring or transmuting lead to gold. It's really the inner process of transforming yourself into something closer to the universe or divine, and reaching that that inner spiritual where you're turning your divine, your soul, into gold and becoming one with, I guess, the divine or the universe. Whereas, you know, some religions say, you know, God is out there. Alchemy is more like, hey, God is in you, and you can reach that by doing specific things and, you know, working on yourself and transmutating your ego into more of becoming self-aware of, you know, who you are and becoming closer to, you know, God within you. So that's kind of like the alchemy beliefs. I know it's very spiritual and it's like, how does this tie to data? We'll get there. So then we have philosophical alchemy, which is the views in the process of transmutation as a symbolic personal transformation enlightenment. And this is really going to be the magnum opus, which is actually the great work of alchemy. This involves personal stages, which is the blackening, the whitening, the yellowing, and the reddening. These are all the stages to get from purification enlightenment. These were the four different stages. Yellow actually kind of like a sub stage or a sub process, sometimes omitted. These are the four processes that alchemists went through to uncover their deeper selves and work through it to become, you know, that perfection of, or creating the philosopher's stone, which probably many of you have heard of, and creating this perfect being of them within themselves. It was a lot of work to do. It took people many, many years to actually get through, to have those breakthroughs, because it's just constant practicing. Some never achieved it. Others did. But it just took many, many years to actually have that happen. But, you know, you have like the blackening, which in the symbolism, this is represents the initial stage of the breaking down or decomposition. This is the phase of like acknowledging your shadow or darker aspects. Psychologically, it's about confronting your inner darkness and the death of your ego. And the practical alchemy, it's the first operation in alchemical process. This is really taking the heating of substance and breaking it down to your base components. After that, it's the purification or decomposition phase where the matter is cleansed and purified. So if you believe in the symbolism and the spiritual side of it, you're breaking yourself down and, you know, to your base thing and getting, you know, breaking down your ego to build yourself back up and refine yourself. It's pretty much what it's talking to. And then you have the psychological in terms of personal transformation. This is about the blackening is about the personal despair and chaos, which is normally triggered by significant life crisis or realization of limitations and mortality. This is an absolute stage in the realm of alchemy as you're going through your spiritual stuff, for growth. This is the groundwork for, you know, finding, you know, breaking down to yourself, to your basic areas, letting go of your, any type of ego or anything else that you might have been dealing with for years, letting it go from a spiritual aspect. This is how it ties back into, and we'll get to data shortly. Then we have the whitening, which is the purification and the washing away of your impurities. This is gaining self-awareness and clarity in the chaos of the blackening, where it represents the uncovering of the conscious and bringing the light to the shadows. So now you're overcoming your shadows and bringing the light to it so you can, you know, be a cleaner self, a more wholer self. In alchemy itself, this involves washing or purification of material. It's often associated with the water and the moon, emphasizing purity and recovery of a wholeness through reflection and introspection. This is just, you know, again, cleansing it. This is then cleansing the materials that they're going to break down to a specific or transmute it from lead to gold. And then in terms of personal transformation, the blackening, and then on a personal level, the whitening phase is a reflection or learning of gradual rebuilding. It's the process of it's exploring the unconsciousness. You know, we use 10% of our brain power. And when we go to sleep, you know, we're using more of it, about 90% more. So we're using, you know, and slowly integrating the lessons from the black phase. It represents hope for potential of renewal and becoming and starting to grow to a higher conscious level. of being aware of more things that are around you and being able to understand the universe in different ways. And you have the then you have the Sinchinita stage or the yellowing stage, which is sometimes omitted. It's because it's considered a subphase, which is actually really drawing in the solar light, which is opposite from the lunar light. Within the alchemist, to manifest any type of wisdom, it's the transmutation of silver, moon, and going to the gold, which is the sun. And this is actually symbolizing enlightenment and discovery of true wisdom. And this, in the physical alchemy, the yellowing stage involves further refinement of the substance. It's about achieving a balance between solar and lunar aspects within the alchemist's work. So it's really about balancing, you know, sun, you know, moon versus sun, trying to find balance in the world. So the, and then the psychological is in this, in the yellowing stage, it's about enlightenment and insight. This is about the integration of lessons, and you're illuminating your mind and the spirit. This is really about mature. This is about, you know, in the realm of alchemy, the ancient alchemy, this is, you know, represents the meditation of the soul and realization of one's true potential. Like, you went through your shit in the black. You found, you know, you broke your ego. You are now working on your darkness. You went through the whitening. You brought the light to the shadows to defeat your demons. And now here you are realizing that after you went through all that, you have some amazing potential. And now you can actually realize that and start working towards the reddening phase, which is the magnum opus, which is the great work of alchemy. And this is like this is taking the birth of the philosopher's stone. This is just fusion of opposites and the material, the unity of like material and spiritual. This is taking your body and your spirit, fusing together and creating what they call the philosopher's stone, which is like the most perfect stone you can have, which is what alchemy, many alchemists that weren't looking at the spiritual world were chasing, were looking for and chasing for. And people fought over it, killed each other over it, trying to find the philosopher's stone that was the stone that could give, you know, immortality. All your craziest dreams come true. You could transmute without exchanging anything. The Full Metal Alchemist show really focuses on this theory of philosopher's stones, and, you know, there is achievement in creating. I won't give any plot points up, but they do achieve, people do achieve creating the philosopher's stone. At a significant sacrifice to make it. So in alchemy, so that's the reddening, is really like perfection and finally reaching the great work of alchemy. The alchemical process in the red stage, it's the final stage. The substance, you know, is finally heated to its high temperature. You're achieving perfection, again, creating the philosopher's stone, and you're now capable of turning metals into base metals into gold and granting immortality. That was the whole alchemical process, and that what many people were trying to achieve. On a personal level, on a psychological level, this represents the wholeness and self-realization. This is the integration of all your other stages, your yellow, your white, and your black. And now you're finally reaching your inner self of becoming one with the cosmos, one with God, and realizing your full true self and becoming, you know, one with the universe and one with yourself. So that's kind of like the whole origins of alchemy and you know, using alchemy in the ancient times throughout all those years. Whether you believe in that or not, it's actually pretty interesting to see how alchemy, and you look at all this and you think of like, well, whitening, you can tie whitening back to baptism. You know, you're purifying yourself of sins and evil, which is whitening is doing the same thing. You're purifying yourself of sins and evil. So it's interesting to see that how alchemy ties back to many religions. And alchemy is probably one of the spiritualisms that were out there. And anything, everything ties back to paganism, to Christianity, to Catholicism. It all ties back to alchemy. And even though many people, the Christians and the Catholics, were very against these teachings and killed and burned down people for it, if they didn't follow them along, which is just horrendous, because they just, you know, whatever, they burnt people at stake, hung them for these beliefs, but all their teachings are somehow connected back to alchemy. All this takes all alchemy is before Christ, before, you know, anything happened and all of that. Whether you believe that or not, bedtime stories, belief, you know, whatever you believe in, you believe. But I just thought it was very cool and how it ties into the different things. And we'll get into the data aspect into it. I wanted to make this more than just, hey, we're going to talk about data, and hey, we're going to talk about, like, you know, let's talk about data and gaming. There is a deep profoundness to alchemy, and just using the word alchemy is cool, but without having an understanding of why we're using alchemy and for our data gathering, for our data science, and how we're going to use it in our gaming, I thought it would just be cool to understand what I view as alchemy from a standpoint of what I'm learning it for, how I'm learning it, and how I'm actually bringing ancient alchemy or spiritual alchemy into my daily life and my daily work. And it's helped me seeing things in a different way and just helped me learn my programming in a different way, because it just lets you see things and approach things in a different manner. So I found this very cool, and I wanted to share this with you. So we're going to move on to alchemical symbols. And the symbols in alchemy are actually very convoluted. There's different symbols that mean different things. Like, you have some triangles that, you know, triangles and different things that are, you know, symbols for Saturn, symbols for fire. And if you're uninitiated in the whole alchemical teachings, you'll sit there and look at it and go, the heck are these symbols? Because look, this is just gibberish. And a lot of people, and I think that's how gibberish was actually came together, because there was one alchemist, I can't remember the name, but he was so well known for masking and disguising the alchemical teachings in all this writing that if you were uninitiated in the teachings of alchemy, you really looked at it and said, it's just gibberish. And that's how gibberish was coined back in like the 600, I think, like AD, during that time. It really became gibberish because people didn't know how to look at it or read it. You know, you had common symbols, which you see every day, you know, the Ouroboros, which if you play Elder Scrolls Online, that is actually, you see the snake eating itself. And that is the, eating its tail, which is just representing the cycle of life and death. The Phoenix, we see that pretty much everywhere. It was in Harry Potter. The Phoenix is the, symbolization of rebirth and regeneration. And if you look at a lot of our modern stuff, a lot of stuff is always pulled back from alchemy. It's one of the oldest teachings. And of course, there's various planetary and elemental symbols, fire, Saturn, Mercury. But these texts were also filled with a lot of allegoric illustrations, cryptic writings, and making the decodings their true meaning, a subject for a lot of debate. You know, however, sometimes the knowledge and the wisdom is in the eye of the beholder. And what you see one way, another person may not, because the person who interprets things can be very different from another person. But a lot of different things that you do, like a lot of readings and teachings in alchemy. I'm reading a few different books right now. The Art of Alchemy, The Alchemist, and The Complete Idiot's Guide to Alchemy is actually a lot of the teachings of alchemy. And a lot of the people who became big teachers of it, like Alexander the Great, he was a big alchemist, and they had the library in Egypt, the Alexander Library. I'm not great at history, but just reading these things, listen to it, you know, that where all the alchemical texts were, and it got destroyed between a war and lost over hundreds and thousands of texts that were lost because of that war, because of, you know, again, trade posts and trade routes that were blocked, and they went to war over it. War over stupid things. That just didn't mean anything. That didn't matter. So anyway, I digress. So that's you know, alchemical symbols and a little of alchemy history. Then we can move on to, like, you know, alchemy in different cultures, which I thought was really cool to figure out. You know, alchemy, you know, I think a big culture where alchemy is really tied into, and I think a lot of people like this, like, you know, you watch Dragon Ball Z and they have, you know, they're charging their ki, or which is a concept of ki, Q-I instead of K-I. You know, the concept of that, and that really stemmed from Taoism, and the Chinese alchemists were focused on this concept of qi, and they sought physical immortality and spiritual purification through this, creating the elixir of life, which was made from gold or cinnabar, was their key goal. Eventually changed, they end up using, you know, qi. I think Lao. I remember his name. I'm very sorry. I'll get the name for you. But there was a famous Taoist who lived to be over 200 years, and it's been documented and many pieces of evidence that he lived at 200 years because he was able to use his key. And he believed that many people who use their key, who as you went throughout your day, your key was expelled from you. And you couldn't, in a human body, you can only keep so much key in you. But he found a way that he could replenish himself by using teachings of Taoism and alchemy and brought them together to be able to keep that key from expelling every day and actually having a more abundance of it, which helped him live to supposedly 200 years old or over that. So, and then we also have like Islamic alchemy or alchema, which was introduced in their early forms of scientific methods. And that actually made a lot of significant contributions to medicine, medagogy, and a lot of chemistry to what we have today. Islamic alchemy or alchema was a big push for what we have today and all the different medicines and sulfurs and mercuries. That's where all that came from. And the same thing with European alchemy. These combined traditions with the strong mystical component from Taoism and Islamic alchemy, and this was influenced with the Renaissance, and we then became the Renaissance, and it became Western traditions, of what we have today, kind of like our science made our pharmacy prescriptions, all that, and eventually was stemmed from alchemy becoming modern chemistry, which is now big pharma's charge people to actually have, to be able to live with medicine, where alchemy back in the times, it was just, you need this, here's this, live. It's just crazy to see how ancient alchemy really changed, slowly started changing the world, and it brought into modern alchemy. And a lot of famous alchemists like Nicolas Flamel, you probably know if you don't really know alchemy, but you probably heard that name drop in a few different modern TV shows or movies, specifically Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. He was mentioned quite a few times. He, in the movie of Sorcerer's Stone, he was the creator of the Sorcerer's Stone, which actually the Sorcerer's Stone got renamed by Scholastic because they believed that kids wouldn't understand what Philosopher's Stone meant in the U.S. So they changed the name because I guess they thought United States people are just too stupid to understand what Philosopher's Stone meant versus Sorcerer's Stone. So whatever. They changed it from Philosopher's Stone to the Sorcerer's Stone. But he was actually a real person who was allegedly created a Philosopher's Stone. But after going through historical evidence, it really suggests more he was more philanthropist than he actually was an alchemist. But either way, he was a very prominent person in the French history for alchemy. Paracelsus, who was actually a Swiss physician, he was also another Harry Potter character or reference, another profound alchemist who really built on medicinal alchemy. He emphasized an importance of observation and experimentation in medicine, and actually from his alchemy created a lot of stuff that we use today. So it was actually very neat to see that he's, in pop culture, these famous alchemists from many, many years ago are referenced. And a lot of the shows and TV and movies that you watch, if you pay attention, you listen to certain things, they all tie back to some type of alchemical teaching, which just shows how old alchemy is. And it's very cool to see. And it's just making me enjoy different TV shows differently. And oh, wow. Cause this is stuff that I've always felt connected to. And I just said, screw it. I'm going to jump into this both feet. Let's go. And so here I am learning. So if I'm explaining things incorrectly and you are you are practicing alchemy or have more knowledge, please share it. And I know I'm willing to learn. I've only been studying it for a month, and this is a lot of stuff that I've just been putting together in the last month. I've been reading and just researching. So if I'm explaining something incorrectly, I would, love to be told that, hey, I'm wrong, and explain how come. So I can learn and make sure that what I'm providing is correct information. I don't get false information. But this is so far what I've learned. So then, of course, we take alchemy into transitioning to modern chemistry. This actually began during the Renaissance, and this was more focused on the mystical and spiritual aspects. to the empirical and systemic investigations of materials and reactions. This is like, how does a chemical reaction actually happen if you mix this with that? What happens? You're moving away from the spiritual realm of things and more moving into the physical matter, which this is where I feel like alchemy and its teachings were kind of lost. This is where humans made that turn from spiritual alchemy into physical alchemy, into taking all those teachings and turning it to something that can benefit us right off the bat, instead of taking 10, 15, 20, 30 years to reach that alchemical perfection. They were able to take things, you know, and make medicines that were people could swallow and take right away. So I found that very interesting. I feel like this is where we started losing our connections to the inner alchemy or spiritual alchemy, and really made it more chemistry focused. This is where I feel also chemistry started to become more of a business, more instead of just a teaching and a belief. We lost our sight. And I feel like as a society, we're kind of losing, we've completely lost that sight. You know, we hold cell phones and video game controllers, and that's not supposed to be what society is about. But because we started losing that scope, I believe in the Renaissance, becoming more of a physical, a more physical creatures or beings than being, than losing access and losing access to our spirituality. That's what I feel. I could be completely wrong, but that's what I believe. So you had figures like Robert Boyle and Antonio Lavoisier who helped lay the foundations of all these modern chemistry, and including and then you had like concepts like elemental and chemical reactions and conversion of mass, which is what you learn in school today. So that's modern chemistry. So it's really deeply profound, I guess, alchemy, and how it really brought from where we started in Egypt. And all these teachings, these mystical teachings, and the Emerald Tablet, and other things we'll discuss as we, you know, we'll have like spiritual episodes as well as we're talking about this, talking about different things. It's not just data and video gaming, because I think there's more to life than just that. Then as you went into it, you know, you the legacy of data alchemy and legacy of alchemy and science, you know. Even though it's all this mysticism, alchemy really contributed to developing scientific equipment like alembics, furnaces. You know, have techniques. You have distillation, sublimation. Like alchemy created all of that. That's what you know today. If you're a scientist and you're doing different things, or you're distilling, you know, distilling whatever, you know, distilling water, distilling this, whatever. That all stemmed back from alchemy. It's the earliest form of the scientific methods. The alchemical tradition fostered a spirit, an inquiry for experimentation, and it was really absolutely crucial to of our modern science. Without alchemy, I don't know where it would be. If that was never found by Thoth and Faust, and actually, you know, set down to Hermes and to Alexander the Great and Cleopatra, not to be confused with Cleopatra, but Cleopatra in Egypt, who became a very historical great alchemist. Like all those teachings, and it got pet, and then, you know, even what brought on war, Arabs invading Egypt and taking down taking all those alchemical teachings, some of them were saved, and then, you know, Islamic alchemy, like all these different things that just branched out from, whether it be they were stolen or shared, the alchemical teachings just kept getting passed down into different worlds, which brought us to our modern science. Which brings us to all that teaching, and I'm sorry if I talked a little fast. I know something I have to work on, but all those teachings of all that actually can tie us down into data. And if you look at this like as a data alchemist, we we're looking for different things to convert. Just as alchemists were converting lead into gold, or getting into data alchemy now, if you look at all these teachings that were transforming lead to gold, or you're going underneath your ego, your spiritual awakening, we look at data alchemy as modern terms that refers to the process of transforming raw data into meaningful insights. And that's like base data into noble insights or golden insights. You know, this is really involves of various stages, kind of like the same way of alchemy does. You need to data collect, you need to clean, transform, analyze, and then visualize your data. And reflecting the meticulous transformative process of traditional alchemy. So you have the same stages of alchemy in here. You have the blackening stage, which is data collection and cleaning. You have the whitening stage, which is data analysis and exploration. You have the yellowing stage, which is feature engineering and model training. And then the reddening stage, which is deployment and actionable insights. So tying alchemy back into data alchemy is really the deep process of understanding the data, breaking it down to its the initial breakdown of raw and unstructured data, which is sometimes as a data alchemist, you're going to get majority of time, you get data handed to you. And it's like, what am I looking at? It's really just chaos and just raw data that makes no sense, but you're acknowledging that it has imperfections and inaccuracies. And then similar to alchemy, we're going to go through it, which involves cleaning and purifying that data. And that means identifying missing values, dealing with outliers, transforming data into a format suitable for analysis, you know, normalizing your data. This is the phase where data alchemists spend a lot of time. This is ensuring that the data is clean and reliable so that we can load it and start analyzing it, whether in a SQL table, using Python libraries like pandas, to really start understanding that data. And then just as the blackening, you know, involves the introspection and facing inner darkness, the data cleansing requires a deep, thorough understanding of the intricacies of the data. It's about recognizing and addressing the limitations and potential biases presenting a data set. So it's just really breaking it down and understanding what this is. Then, you know, in the whitening phase, this is where our data, the data alchemy symbolizes the phase of exploring and analyzing purified data. So now we can actually start slowly getting insight after we cleanse the data in the blackening phase. We dealt with missing values, found outliers, transformed data into something suitable for analysis. We can now use that clean data to discover patterns and understanding the underlying structures. The data alchemy process is using, you know, usually involves statistical analysis, data visualization, exploratory data analysis, or EDA, and data alchemists will use analysis. Data alchemists and data analysts will use various tools and techniques to uncover these insights and these trends for suitable analysis. And data scientists and analysts use various tools and techniques to uncover insights, trends, and relationships within that data. And this is kind of similar to the alchemical process of washing and purifying. The psychological process of this as well is about reflection and learning. So once you go through it, this stage of data alchemy is really about reflecting your initial official findings, questioning assumptions, and iteratively refining the analysis to ensure you actually have accuracy and relevance based on what you were trying to understand. And then we jump into the yellowing phase. Again, this can also be omitted, but you know, in data alchemy, this stage starts to symbolize the transformation of insights into actionable models and enhancements of data features to improve model performance. So it's actually like really starting to transform those insights that you have into some type of actionable model, whether it be a graph, whether it be a predictive machine learning. You can start to action on it. This all in the data alchemy process, this is, you know, involves feature engineering, where data alchemists create new features from the existing data to present represent that problem. It also includes any type of machine learning models, tuning hyperparameters, and validating any type of model performance. You know, this is also tying back to the alchemical process of refining and the sublimating the substance. Then inside the psychological parallel for yellowing phase, it's about enlightenment and the manifestation of that wisdom. You know, you're starting to understand that data, you're able to apply that the knowledge in that domain, and the analytic expertise is able to refine, you're able to refine the models and extract a maximum value from that data. Then you have your reddening phase, which is the deployment of your actionable insights. And this is really going to then take the data alchemy of the magnum opus, the great work of your data alchemy. This is actually symbolizing the achievement of the ultimate goal. And this stage represents the deployment of models into the production and transmission of data-driven insights into real-world actions and decisions. This is making that graph, that chart, that predictive analysis, handing it to a stakeholder or somebody else that now, instead of having all this uncontrollable, chaotic data, you have now made it into the perfect story they can take and make a actionable decision, a conscious decision, and understanding their data to say, yes, we need to approach it this way, or we should do it this way to make sure that our company, our clients, whatever the case, can have, we can achieve what we need to make, whether it be more money, more sales, more growth in getting people, whatever the case. Helping patients, you know, whether even if you're in healthcare, you notice like there's disease that's going on. What's the best way to stop this, prevent it? What medicines work? What don't work? All that analysis and statistics are you know, starting to come together, and you can finally hand it to people who are able to make those higher decisions based on the data you're giving. So this is the data alchemy process. This plan involves, you know, deploying that trained model in production environments. You're monitoring the model performance, and you're continually improving on the results. That's about, you know, integrating these insights gained from the models for decision making. This is really achieving the philosopher's stone of actionable business value. Like, this is the perfect, you know, after all understanding that data, it took you 3-4 months to understand that data, to build what you need to build. Here it is. And in their eyes, it's a philosopher's stone because it's perfect, and they can make the best decisions based on the data that we have gathered. In the psychological parallel, this represents the writing phase, represents the achievement of wholeness again, and self-realization. This is a stage in data alchemy, symbolizes the realization of the project's goals, unification of data insights with the business objective, and the tangible impact of data-driven decisions for the organization. So now here you are, you know, built your these whatever you built, whether it be a graph, predictive analysis, live dashboards, that they can keep track of all this information at a glance and can see, and based on that can make their best decisions for their business based on their objective, based on their objectives. So that's discussed all that in the beginning to get to this, so we can understand what alchemy is, where it came from, what the phases are, the four main phases are, how those four main phases can tie into real life, to how it can tie into data. Then you have, and that's my belief in data. Like, we're not just taking zeros and numbers and random text characters. We're actually looking at different things to understand it at its most chaotic value, at most chaotic presence, to purify it, to clean it, explore it, and then to actually action on it and build on it and then action on it. So those are the four phases that I like to tie into my data, because most data I get is absolutely just chaotic. I'm like, what am I looking at? Like, trying to build Remnant 2 data files from pulling from specific wikis, and the wikis are great, but some people just, you know, they put things in, they put dashes in where a zero, you know, if you're dealing with numerical data and you have 5% and you have a dash, which is supposed to be a null value, or it doesn't have anything, putting a dash in a numeric column or a numeric column with row data that should be zero instead of a dash, it's very hard to calculate that. So it's normalizing that data, cleaning up the data, removing things you don't need, making sure that you're understanding how it works. Then when you understand how it works, you can build the correct data for your clients, for your stakeholders, so they can make their best decisions. And then, you know, data is the new lead. You're taking as alchemists sought to transform the lead into gold, us as a data alchemist is converting our raw data into raw data and unstructured data into golden insights. This process requires the understanding of the context, cleaning the data, and any type of appropriate analytical methods to reveal any hidden patterns and insights. And that's following those four phases that we were just discussing. This is the modern philosopher's stone in data alchemy. We have tools like AI, machine learning, big data analytics, which are really close to like the philosopher's stone, offering the promise of valuable insights from vast amount of data. You know, I think in 10 years, we have changed from so much. We went from like data just kept growing and growing and growing. We have like a plethora of amounts of data. And I think the biggest thing for data alchemists is, and I think the hardest thing we have right now in the data world is you have people who are good at viewing data and going through data, but you don't have people who are good at analyzing large data and how to handle large data. So I think we have a gap right now in that world where you have people who are coming into it and are good data analysts, but aren't good data alchemists and don't know how to transform that large data set into the valuable insights that people are looking for. And that gap will bridge. I think it's going to take time because we're just using a lot of data. And we'll get there. I think it's slowly getting better. We're going to see bigger booms in the data science, data alchemy market within the next few years. So it's going to be extremely, extremely huge. So the tools that data alchemists, you can use tools like Python, which is great for data manipulation. They can use machine learning, R for statistical analysis, SQL for database management. They'll even use tools like Tableau or Power BI for data visualization, which allows us to present their findings in a very impactful way. I think the biggest thing about data alchemy is you are building data, and you can be a great analyst, but you also have to be a great storyteller. If you're not a good storyteller, taking all the data and then exporting out without the proper way of understanding that data to put it into a story that talks about A through Z, that you can just hand it to somebody and they go, oh, I understand what I'm looking at. And they can make a decision based off of that. If you just are able to export stuff, but there's no meaningful value to the data you're exporting, it becomes kind of useless. So you mean making sure you're cleaning the data correctly before any type of analysis is absolutely important, because having raw and unstructured chaos with data is extremely hard to work with. And without having that data cleaned, you're never gonna be able to do it right. And so that's probably like our most important part. The two most important phases and the longest phases always in any type of spiritualism is going to be your shadow work. Working through the black phase is the decomposition and trying to go through the self-discovery and defeating your demons. And it's going to be the same thing with data, is getting through all that chaotic data and trying to make sense of it, cleaning it up, normalizing, getting rid of all the inaccuracies so you can get to the white phase where you can start understanding and start analyzing it. Data transformation involves converting data from one format to a structure. So, taking an Excel file and then running it through a Python script to convert it into an XML structure, so you can load it into an application that only reads XML. But there might be some things you have to do a lot of cleanup with. And using Excel is great, but Python can make it much easier, because once you have the code there, you always have the code, and it could just be different columns you need to use. And as long as the data types are the same, and if they aren't, you can use a Python script to change the data types. But then you use Python to run through it, and it just changes everything around and spits it out into a structured XML file. And then you can load it into an application that takes the XML file to disabled users, to read financial data, whatever the case might be they're using it for. And then you have things like predictive analysis and machine learning. This is using statistic models and machine learning algorithms to predict future events based on historical data. This stage of data alchemy is like foreseeing the future through the philosopher's stone, turning data into a really predictive tool, which is cool. And that's something I would love to get into as I learn more about data science and data alchemy. As I get into it more, I really like to start building algorithms and looking at things, especially in the video game aspect, looking at historical data, looking at all the different builds, say like for Elden Ring, these are all the different builds that people put together. And then based on that historical data, predict future builds for new DLCs that might come out based on all that information. I think that'd be a cool direction to go, instead of just like attaching weapons to your character and moving forward, or even using it for as a Twitch, as a content creator or a streamer, pay attention to your historical data, what you did in the last year, and predict what your year is going to look like this year using the tools and the things you have using and the tools and the knowledge that you've used in the last few years to grow. Predict your growth for the next year and how to make it grow more. So I think that's really cool. And to use all that, that's the importance of visualization. This is the final stage of data alchemy and turning complex results into understandable actual insights. You just can't hand, if you have alchemical texts that are using, symbols and illustrations, but they need to make sense. And that's the problem that we had with with alchemy, is that you had these texts and these scrolls and these different ciphers that made no sense. And then you had to have people to decipher them. And once they deciphered them, they would present them in a way that was meaningful to who wanted to learn. So that's the importance of visualization, is taking that chaotic data, that data that doesn't make sense to you, uninitiated, and you turn it into something that is actionable and makes sense to people who don't care about the raw data. No, then you also have inside of that you have the responsibility of data alchemy. You know, it's like traditional alchemy. You hold immense power, and with immense power, you have great responsibility and potential. And this comes with the responsibility to use data ethically and provide and protect your individual's privacies and rights, making sure that data doesn't get into the wrong hands or leaked. So that's where, you know, IAM comes into play. Identity access management, making sure that people have the access at the right time and no other access for them to have. They have minimal access. They need to do a job, and that's all. And that's kind of, you know, those are my wheelhouses: data alchemy, identity access management. I believe they go very well hand in hand. Using both of them together can really produce some powerful insights, especially from like who has access to what, why do they have access to it, when did they access it, when did they get that access, they shouldn't have that access. And using all that falls into the ethics and responsibility of data alchemy. You know, it's making sure that people can only access it when they're supposed to. So having like data security and modern equivalents of that is surrounded in practice of traditional alchemy. You know, alchemy in the wrong hands could be, you know, transcribed or used the wrong way for greed and things and other reasons. Then you have like, you know, alchemy of collaboration, openness. You know, modern data alchemy thrives on collaboration, opening, sharing of knowledge, you know, contrasting with the secretive practices of traditional alchemy. You know, traditional alchemy, which it was secretive because you couldn't practice alchemy in that time, in those ages, especially like in the Renaissance ages, where the church has had so much power. And if you didn't believe in anything else but what the churches were teaching, you were burned at the stake for heresy. The church, which I felt I was reading different literature and books, that the church believed that cats were you know, the spawn of the devil. So they were built into homes, buildings, to ward off evil spirits, and also were thrown into fires when people being burned at the stake for heresy and witchcraft. Which was also neat, but was also a big reason of how come the Black Plague ran rampant, because so many cats were killed because of this belief that the rat population grew, which allowed the plague to just spread and wipe out half of the European population. So it's just interesting to see in history. The more you learn how things happen, that's something you never learned in school. Like, oh yeah, the church was, you know, out of their freaking minds and believed that, you know, cats had to be burned because they were evil and they were used to ward off evil spirits and certain other beliefs to put them inside buildings. And it was all back to the Catholic Church. And I'm not trying to knock on the Catholic Church, but it just shows that in religion versus spiritualism, where religion's, you know, ruled by fear, and spiritualism is just like, we accept any God because we believe there's more than one God out there. It's absolutely just crazy to, you know, read that. And that historically, that's why the Black Plague came about, was because of freaking cats were burned to death and were built into homes and buildings so people could be safe and feel like they were warding off evil spirits, which in turn killed half of a population because of things like that. So I don't think anyone knew that was going to happen. We're not expecting the Black Plague to happen, but just things like that, I just blew my mind reading that. I'm like, wow, that's how the, you know, one of the reasons why the Black Plague was rampant is because they killed so many cats. So just interesting, interesting history that you learn. So data alchemy and the impact of industry. This has transformed various industries, from healthcare, predictive diagnostics, personalized treatments, to finance. We have fraud detection, risk management, even beyond that. And that's a lot of like AI and machine learning, especially now with like things like ChatGPT. AI has become so prevalent in our age. We're in the AI revolution right now. And I really feel that if you're not in that revolution, not using AI against it because of art, this, music, whatever, it's you're going to be behind in the next 5 to 10 years, and you'd be playing catch up. I know there's a lot of gray areas with gray areas with AI and things like that. And I understand them and I hear them. Artists' work being stolen, things like that. So I get that. And I think they need to come up with some type of way of doing that. Poisoning AI, I'm not sure if really is the way of doing it. I like what they can do, but I don't think that's the way of doing it. And my it's topic of conversation kind of around this, but my thought about this is, I go to an artist and I hand them a reference artwork and say, I want you to make it look like this. And I've done that. I've taken artwork from games like Neo, Final Fantasy, Chrono Trigger, Schoolhouse of Rock, and went to artists and said, I want you to make something in this style. And they take and put their spin on it. So my question is, that stealing? Because that's what everyone's saying AI is doing right now. And a lot of those works were those publications were copywritten by the specific owner, Square Enix, Tecmo, who the heck is it? Who makes Neo? Team Ninja, all of them. You know, they locked at. You know, there's a copywritten material. So is it stealing? I don't know. I'm not sure. But I've gone to artists and asked them to draw something in their image by giving them a piece of reference, and that's what AI is doing. So it's a gray area, but people still do it to this day, going to artists with another piece of artwork saying, here's a reference, draw this. So is it stealing? Because if you're an artist using a reference piece of work, another person that drew it, you're doing the same thing AI is doing. So I don't know where that falls. And it's a touchy subject, but I just think we need to talk about it because it's happening every day. I've done it. I went to artists and said, draw this. Here's a reference for you. Make me something. I go to AI. I'm like, hey, make a character that looks like blah, 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 blah. And maybe your artwork, it pulls from, you know, DeviantArt, and it sees your artwork and it pulls in from there. But if I took your artwork from DeviantArt and went to another artist and said, hey, I want you to draw something in your style based off of this, is that stealing? So anyway, challenges and limitations, despite its potential, data alchemy faces challenges such as data quality issues. And this is really a complex and integrating complex and diverse data sources that need skilled practitioners. This is what I was talking back to you before. Like, we have people in the data science world, data alchemy world, that are great at analyzing data, but it's very hard for people. I think now they're coming into it, are good with data, but you have all this large data and don't know how to handle it yet. And they're learning, and we're getting there. But I think as we start getting better with, you know, with understanding large data sets, how to handle those large data sets, produce results, we'll get better and better. I'm not saying that there aren't people who know how to do it. I just think that we're in a stage right now where it's still booming. It's the sexiest job of the 21st century, is what Data 365 still reports. So it's Data Science 365, excuse me. So it's actually still interesting. To see that we're growing, and we may not have the skilled practitioners that we need for these large data sets that are coming in. So the future of data alchemy, I think this is very promising, especially with advancements in AI, machine learning, cloud computing is massive. This is going to be massive, massive area. And I think I was reading an article from Data Science 365 that after doing a report of like 1,000 jobs on LinkedIn, majority of them were in the data science field, in the IT sector, looking for people who had data science knowledge, looking for people who had Python and SQL skills. 33% of the jobs didn't require people to have a degree in data science or anything like that. You just need to have some skills and how to handle data. The average salary was about $125,000, and 6% of those jobs were actually in California. So it's actually pretty cool to see all that. So it's definitely still a booming market, and I think it's supposed to grow by an extra 43% or something like that, if I recall. I think I'll have to look at the numbers again, but it's supposed to be like an extra 40 some odd percent. It's going to grow an extra 36% for data scientists or alchemists from 2021 to 2031. So we still have 7 years for this market to grow. An employment rate for data science will grow by 36% between 2020 and 2031. I think that's massive, and it's gonna be a job to be in 100%. And then I found that actually interesting that in the same article that 55% of job offers were entry-level positions, not even like looking for experienced data alchemists. They're looking for people who are entry level, that's crazy to me. So very, very interesting. I really think this is going to be a very, really big place, and an interesting place to be in. I think this and IAM is going to be huge in the next few years, especially combined together. I think this the breaches and you know, security has become such a big thing as well. And now coupling that with data alchemy is just a massive way to keep your company safe and your assets and your data and your employees safe. Educational pathways for data alchemy, you know, this is like a blend of formal education from, you know, computer science, statistics, data alchemy, complemented with on-hand experience and continuous learning. You know, it's one of those things that you just can't get a degree and then move on. This is something that the data game is constantly changing. The tools that we're using are constantly getting improved, constantly changing. So as you're getting into this, it's going to be a constant learning experience. I'm a very firm believer in the moment you stop learning is the moment you become obsolete. So this is one of the things you just cannot stop learning, because someone else will just be learning and will continue to be better than you, and you'll be left behind, which is why I'm a big pusher on AI and 100% really doesn't matter what sector you're in, use it, learn it. Whether your feelings are on it, this is the revolution. It's here to stay. It's not going anywhere. It's changing the fields of healthcare, finance, of art, of music, and it's here. And I think we're adapting to it, and yes, talking about it transparently and finding ways to use it and make sure it's not harming specific jobs and positions and things like that are ways of handling it. But being against it and saying I'm not using it or fight against it to get it turned off or suing a company to wipe out all its data because they use copyrighted data, I think it's just silly. I think finding middle grounds and working together to better humanity with tools like this is really important. And then we have, you know, especially and then in the same area and educational pathways, you have online platforms, Udemy, Coursera. They offer a lot of certifications that are accessible for individuals. You don't have to spend thousands and thousands of dollars on a college degree. There are places on Coursera that have universities like University of Michigan offering some crazy Python data science actually courses that are great to jump into. A lot of them beginner to intermediate, but they're good to learn. They give you a great degree. It has University of Michigan's name on it. So if an employer is looking for something, they got that. I think when it comes to like data alchemy and, you know, programming and things like this, having education is great, but having education plus a portfolio speaks volumes compared to just being fresh out of college with no experience, no portfolio. So if you're in college and doing that, you know, yeah, I know they give you projects inside of college, but I would look for more things to do outside of your college degree portfolio and build something on the side as a project that you can turn around to a potential employer and said, yeah, well, I built this. This is what I do, and this is how I make my analytics work and I provide to people. Whatever it be on a gaming platform or, you know, Twitch platform, or maybe you freelance as a data alchemist, doing freelance work for them to come up with visualizing their data and helping them make their best decisions for their company. The community and collaboration, I think this is like one of the biggest things. There are tons of resources online. The data alchemy community is absolutely very supportive. Tons of forums, lots of conferences and meetups, you know, facilitating knowledge sharing, collaboration, networking. I think this is also another big thing. And this is another big thing in any kind of network, right? Any type of area, regardless if you are in IAM, if you're in data alchemy, if you're in healthcare, whatever you're in, finance, you know, the food industry, it does not matter. You should always be on the outlook for like a Reddit forum that's, you know, positive and sharing knowledge, some type of like, you know, conferences you can go to and network, collaborate with each other and just share knowledge on how data science, what tools are you using, how to maybe improve scripts or improve processes and procedures, how to improve a specific dish. I think those are always a great thing to do with regardless of what our community you're in. But specifically the data alchemist community is really, really very vibrant with a lot of knowledgeable people, and really good things to work on. I think Reddit has a data science forum or our data science. You can go join there and read a lot of different things and post different, talk about data science or alchemy and talk about it. And then the democratization of data, this is any type of tools or platforms that are, you know, making the data accessible to non-experts. This is something like AI. You have AI, you know, ChatGPT, Pinned, or any other type of Bard or any other type of AI large language model that's out there. that you can go to and use. I mean, ChatGPT, the pro version, has a data analytic portion you can click into, drop in an Excel sheet, tell it what you need to do, and it does it for you, which is great. But at the same respect, you're not learning anything, and it's not always that great. There are times you have to correct AI a lot. I'm using, you know, when I used to learn Python, it made a lot of mistakes. I had to correct it a lot, or I would just take the code and fix where I need to fix it. So you still need that human, you need to that human interaction, and just, you know, that human input to correct AI, because it's good, but it makes a lot of mistakes. Then the transformation of data alchemy. This, you know, this is really a journey from this whole discussion has been like a journey of practices, from alchemy to transparent. Collaborative field of data alchemy highlights the human quest for knowledge, understanding, and transformation, and whole aspect of it. The narrative arc not only chronicles our relationship with data, but it also really underscores the enduring human desire to unlock the mysteries of the universe. We want to, as a society, as humans, our first thing to do is help. It's just, it's our, in our nature. And if you think about it, and I'm going to use a prime example, is a social engineering attack. As you have someone who, whether it be a physical social engineering attack or someone reaches out to you online, and your first instinct as a human being is to help that person. And that's just because we want to make society better. We want to make sure that we're all helped. And it's there. It's just, I think we're just so lost in the sauce of just everything that's going on around in society, is bombings in the Middle East, you know, things being blown up over here, Texas and freaking federal government are at each other's throats. Like, there's just crazy things all over the world that are happening. And I feel like the world itself, or just is just, it's the humanity and society on itself, is just on a brink of destruction, that we just need to bring ourselves back down to the basics of like some type of spiritualism, alchemy, paganism, whatever it is, and just come down to it and look at our inner selves and what can we fix. We are so far removed from what our ancestors wanted for us. It's so crazy where we are today. And that's a little deep. I know this whole conversation has been pretty deep in terms of like data science and gaming and content creation. We will have conversations like this. I just wanted to do this one because I really wanted this one out of the to be cleaned up, and to be cleaned up, to talk about, you know, data alchemy and how it really converts into data alchemy and what my brand is really focused on. I understand it's a little deep for people, and, you know, touching on things that maybe you just don't believe in or whatever the case, but hey, that's cool. Everyone has their own beliefs, and I accept everyone and anybody. My arms are always open, and I love talking about stuff like this. So if, whether it be on the religious side of some type of like Catholicism or Christianity, anything like that, you know, Judaism, I'm always open to learn and talk and understand more, and how I can learn more and bring that into my alchemical learnings as well. But after this episode, there won't be that many deep episodes like this. The next episode we're going to talk about is more focused on where we are in the data science and the data alchemist market, where we are in the IAM market, and then from there we're going to more gaming and things like that. But the underlying principles of all our conversations will be around alchemy and their ancient teachings and how they tie into the modern society today. Because I just believe that's something that should be looked at and talked about. And I feel like it was completely lost on us. And I feel that people way back when were at a deeper connection with the universe and had a deeper wisdom and deeper knowledge than what, you know, where we are today as a society. And I'm not trying to knock us as humans. I just felt like, you know, as a deeper spiritual connection of knowledge and wisdom, is we are completely disconnected from the universe. So, but until next time, you know, keep alchemizing your data, and I hope your insights shine like gold, and I appreciate you all listening to this. I'll check you in the next one. Every Tuesday, this one will be posted. This one will be posted January 30th, and then the following after that will be February 6th. So every Tuesday, there should be a new podcast. So I appreciate you all listening. I'll check you in the next one. Peace out, alchemists.